Mum As You Are is a place for self-compassionate reflection, to use what you have within you right now, as you are, perfectly imperfect, to find your way through motherhood. I'm Dr. Erin Bauer, clinical and perinatal psychologist, author of More Than a Healthy Baby, course creator, and mum of two. This is my second podcast. Welcome if you've followed me over from my birth trauma work. This current podcast offering is bite-sized, unfancy, and unplanned. A roadmap for finding your way back to self-compassion and how to replace numbing and escapism with true, meaningful fun. I talk about motherhood as an identity and an institution, perinatal mental health and patriarchy, parental burnout and numbing. The core message is to practice the question, I wonder. Instead of judging ourselves and engaging in comparisonitis, we simply ask ourselves, I wonder. I wonder. So what if you just hate playing with your kid? What's that about? Do you talk to anybody about it? These are some of the sneaky things that come up in therapy sometimes, so I thought it might be useful to unpack it a little bit. There's a few reasons, I think, why people say that they hate playing with their kids, so let's just dive into it. I think one that's really common is this thing about unrelenting standards in motherhood. I've actually had so many conversations like this, but I'm reminded of one recently where somebody was pregnant, and they're saying to me, like, in tears, like, I just can't play with my son for 12 hours a day. I feel so guilty, but I'm just so tired. To which I said something like, where did you learn the idea that you had to play with your kid for 12 hours a day? But some of us have this idea that this is what good mums do. Good mums play all day long. They make perfectly nutritious food, and every toy is eco-friendly and really educational, and everybody's wearing linen, and their children are eating 5 to 7 vegetables a day, and like no one has a tantrum, and it goes on and on and on and on and on, right? So quality is better than quantity, and things like giving kids limited choices, keeping things really simple, and potentially waiting to see if you're invited to play are all important here. It's probably worth reminding, if you didn't already know, that around 18 months of age-ish, kids start to develop a sense of self outside of themselves. So Michelle Odent always talks about there's no such thing as a baby, it's a baby and a caregiver. But after about 18 months of age, kids start to sort of like explore the world and see themselves as independent. And you need to be alone to hear your own thoughts, figure out what you think, what you like, what you don't like. Like, if you've constantly got someone, I use this analogy, maybe that's helpful. If you've constantly got your boss over your shoulder, micromanaging and suggesting and like doing everything all day, would that be fun? Would you develop a sense of confidence? Would you develop a sense of being able to relax into yourself? No. So, we need to develop confidence and trust that we're going to be safe and that we're going to be valued in the world. And you can't do that if someone is orchestrating every minute of your life. It is possible, I think, that we're doing too much for our children. I mean, as they get older, right? Cutting off crusts. I do it too, but it's unnecessary. Doing up buttons on shirts because it's quicker than if you let them do it themselves. I do that too. A thing that I sometimes hear people also say is, because you hear it parroted back when kids say it, is they pick up a toy and say, what does this do? Instead of, what could it be? So making less imaginative options for our children. This is a large part of what I mean about keeping things simple. If you've fallen victim to the thing that a lot of us have fallen victim to, and your house is mostly full of toys that you push a button and they make a noise and that's it, they don't really do anything else, you're not going to get a lot of mileage out of that. There is the argument that kids are better off with open-ended, could be anything kind of play, you know. I won't get too much into that because that is probably a separate episode for actually how to do that. But Essentially, what you need to know in this bit is that you're not abandoning your child by letting them learn to play alone. Allow them to be frustrated, allow them to hate it for a bit. But if you set up an area that's called a yes space, I didn't invent that, it's a thing from Montessori and a few other approaches as well, but if you set up a safe space where they can generally keep themselves safe if you walk out of the room, right? They are allowed to touch everything that's there. They're allowed to explore. Think of your play area as a shared workspace. Play is the work of children. That's really, really, really important. Create an area where they're not going to hurt themselves and you can do co-working, right? It's a lot easier then to kind of lie on the couch for a few minutes. Or longer than a few minutes. Check a few emails. Leave the room. These are all things that are normal and expected. You don't have to micromanage your child every minute of the day. My next point was to consider rethinking what you mean by play. I'm a wordy person. I'm an author, right? Language and communication fascinates me. And something else that fascinates me about humans as a psychologist is that if you tweak a word or you change a word, sometimes you see all sorts of unblocking happening. So let me give you an example. Two words that I know are tricky in therapy. One is exercise and another is meditation. Sometimes there are barriers for mums doing either of those things because they have a really built up schema, so a collection of ideas, a collection of experiences and beliefs that go with that, right? So if I say the word exercise, for me, that conjures up, you know, 10 plus years of sport, group activities, running, doing everything in PE that I didn't enjoy, right? There's a whole world of exercise out there that's got nothing to do with any of those things, but the word still is like, ooh, it's a word that constricts me, not lights me up. So I have to call it movement, right? If I say to myself, I'm going to move my body today versus I have to exercise today, it's a small tweak, but for me personally, like it helps. So similar to meditation, a lot of people have this very quite limited idea of what they think meditation is supposed to be. That's another idea for another episode. I actually do have an episode on meditation. You should look that one up. Offhand, I'm not looking at it, but it's called something like Why Meditation Sucks. You should check that one out. That's a trigger word for you. But it's true. The word play for a lot of adults conjures up anxiety and a whole sense of expectations. And maybe you don't enjoy the same activities as your child, and that's okay. Maybe you just need to broaden your focus. You need a menu. So you can Google, I'm sure that someone must have already done this, like don't reinvent the wheel, but look up quality time activities or playtime activities. Print off pictures. Kids are not good with words. Sometimes grown-ups aren't either. Print off some pictures and then sort them into piles. Things that you both like, things you sort of like, things you don't like. And then you've got a menu to return to when your child says, play with me. So you can figure out what can you do that's side by side. So again, think about it more again as this like co-working space. Sometimes you'll come together and you'll chat and you'll do something and then you'll go off and do your own things. That's setting kids up for life. So yeah, there's important skills being developed here. For kids, they need to learn that their friends are not always going to want to play the same thing, right? And so to be a confident leader, you need to be able to have empathy, you need to be able to take turns, and you need to be able to have compassion for how someone else is feeling. If you've got a friend who really doesn't enjoy, I don't know, running around, then you need to come up with a different activity that you both like. That's lifelong skills. Also, there is a lot of research saying that as kids get older, so they're tweens and teens, it's easier to talk to them if you're side by side than face on. Which is interesting in itself. But things like walking the dog, sitting in a car together, sitting and playing a console game together, you're more likely to actually be able to have a conversation with them, a meaningful conversation. So think about that, setting up those side-by-side activities and wind-down activities as well. Maybe it's like play for you conjures up this idea of like a really active, busy, loud, noisy time. It doesn't have to be. It nights in our house, for example, when everyone's tired and cranky, and mostly people are tired and cranky because their cup's not full, but you've got the, like, it's Monday night and CBF. Like, I'm a person, right? Sometimes I talk to like 6 or 7 clients a day and I'm really like emotionally spent at the end of the day. And playing is the last thing I feel like doing. Like, I'm a human and I'm a mum too. So we do something called fairy time, right? We light a candle or we'll put the diffuser on, the lights go down. It's nothing fancy. We bring out some colouring in books and we do colouring in. But we call it fairy time, right? So the ritual of coming up with a name, there's a whole kind of, yeah, ritual behind it. It's something that I'm hoping, like, well, you can do this at any age. Mindful colouring in. You don't need to be particularly skilled. You don't need to be particularly switched on to sit and do a colouring in. And sometimes the kids and I will do one together. Sometimes they do their own. Sometimes I just sit and do it by myself, right? You're modelling, wind down. It's something you can do at any age. Just like, it's a small example, right? The other thing to be mindful of though, is if you really hate playing, to watch yourself burn out, like burnout and exhaustion. This is what my next book's on, parental exhaustion. So loss of pleasure in parenting and emotional distancing from your kids, it can be a sign that you're approaching burnout or you're there. I talk about this in Social Media Detox for Mums, so my second book, that during lockdowns, I really didn't enjoy playing. I would do like the minimum. There was definitely like a trigger there with like craft and stuff with that. I've since learned to like, not Minecraft again, but not Minecraft again, but like not mind doing craft. But honestly, there were days where I found myself like just avoiding playing. I'd like go and do housework or catch up on work. I'm like, who is this person? That's not what I ever thought I'd spend my time doing. So if that's the case for you and, you know, you're starting to lean into that like guilt of like, well, I'm not the parent I wanted to be, like have some compassion for yourself, but like take the steps that you need to get support if you're thinking that you're burnt out. The last thing I think I want to talk about was just this idea that people don't know how to play. And I've asked people, like, what do you not like about playing? And I've heard things like, well, isn't that why we buy them toys, so I don't have to play with them? I've heard people say some version of, like, oh, I feel awkward, it's embarrassing, I don't know what to do. It's that thing of, like, yeah, okay, maybe you can't bring yourself down to that level, if you want to put it that way. But maybe think about, like, did your parents play with you? Or look at it like skills development. Have you had the opportunity to learn how to play? And I'm guessing the answer is going to be no. Think of it like any other skill that has been modeled to you. Play is a skill. It's a very complicated set of skills. It's not something that just necessarily comes naturally. Just because we think children play, like, I should know how to do that. No, not necessarily. So, like, I mean, my own mum, great at playing, loved playing, but as one example of something you could consider play, she never learned to ride a bike. Like, never. Just wouldn't do it. She never learned as a child. Her mum didn't know, and so, it's not rocket science. It's a pattern of something wasn't modelled, it wasn't valued, or there just wasn't the opportunity to learn, and then you become an adult and you get all embarrassed, right? Like, adults don't necessarily like admitting things that they don't know how to do. But I'm just saying, don't take it as a personal failing. Maybe just see it as like, here is a skill you didn't learn how to do for whatever reason. And I think as an adult, learning how to play, even just for yourself, right, is such a valuable thing, because like whatever the reason someone is coming to therapy, for someone like me, for example, that they're depressed, they're anxious, they're feeling flat, they're burnt out, they've got trauma, whatever it is, part of this is always going to be like, well, what's the opposite of that? What's the opposite that you're looking for? It's fun, it's joy, it's, what is play? Like, some people haven't worked that out yet, and that's okay. I don't mean like good enough fun, like scrolling your phone and having a bubble bath and being like, oh, that's nice. Is that the stuff you're going to be, like, excited about when you're older and people are asking you about your life looking back? No. So it's that, where's the, what do the French call it, the joie de vivre? There's also the Japanese ikigai. Like, stuff like this is really important. Like, what is a life well lived? Maybe that needs to be something that's figured out as well. Like, gosh, what are you doing with your life if you're not having fun? That's all I'm saying. So there's different aspects to play and why it triggers people. And you might have found some of yours in there. Hopefully there's something in there that's helpful. But you're not alone if you don't enjoy playing. But maybe rethink what you're telling yourself. Rethink the story that you're telling yourself there.